Current state on 90.5 WKAR. Thanks for joining us. Travelers across the country and around the world have been using the book 1,000 Places to See Before You Die as a guidebook for more than a decade now. The book is author Patricia Schultz's effort to encourage people to get out there and see the great big world around us. Now there's a second edition of the book. I'm going to have to live a lot longer if I'm going to get anywhere with this list, I'll tell you, Scott. And the author is coming to Okemos this week to talk about it. Current state Scott Pohl spoke with Patricia Schultz about the new 1,000 Places to See. Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Mark. You've done a lot more world travel than I have. Maybe you've gotten more use out of your copy of the first edition of the book than I've been able to with mine. But the books of Patricia Schultz are still of interest to people who, like Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life, dream of seeing all that the world has to offer, even if they haven't been able to actually do so. Patricia Schultz will talk about the new edition of her book on Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Schuller Bookstore in the Meridian Mall. She says it's hard to explain what made the first edition of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die so popular.
I suppose it was, well, simply the fact that it had never really been done before. I mean, there are travel books galore, but this is written by one person, one voice, one me. And it was written from personal experience. It wasn't a team of people kind of pulling from the internet blindly. And it also happened in the wake of 2001, September 11th. This book came out 2 years later when people, Americans, were just starting to kind of get up and move and travel internationally again. And, you know, somebody said to me, you can't put die in the title. It was new. It was kind of alarming to some people initially, but was then wildly embraced and incredibly popular in markets around the world, not just in the U.S. So it was a sense of carpe diem, life is precious, get up, go out, explore the world. You know, it's no dress rehearsal, this is it. So much to see, the possibilities. As Americans, we can travel so easily, and it remains startling to me that just 30% of Americans have passports, because we can get them, we can get passports and visas. And why people go annually to Disney World when they can spend that same money. It's very expensive to go to Disney World these days. So I think it was just a wake-up call, and it was beautifully done. I have a wonderful publisher who did a very attractive, user-friendly book where, you know, whether you've traveled a lot or not at all, it was an easy book to consult, whether as a dream book or as a real, you know, brass tacks for details and where to and how to. It was an easy book to use.
You know, it's interesting to me that you bring up the notion that there was a consideration of not including the word die in the title, because I was going to posit with you that the title is one reason that it was as popular as it was. 1,000 Places to See Before You Die sort of fits into that whole notion of a bucket list and getting to some things before it's too late to do them.
Exactly, because, you know, I grew up with this very flippant, you know, joke kind of expression that there are only two things in life that, you know, are going to happen, and one is that you're going to have to pay taxes, and the other is that our time is limited. We all die. I mean, this is not a new concept. But why people choose to think, you know, live with this bet that they can put it off until some other time in their lives when they'll have the opportunity and the budget and the time to travel. No, that never happens. There are no guarantees. Life is very precious, and you're never as young as you are today. And there's no guarantee that, you know, you're going to win the lottery and make these things happen. I traveled on a shoestring budget that would have just stunned most of my fellow travelers. I made things happen when I had pretty much next to nothing in the bank. So if it is a priority and you are curious and you want to see what the world offers, and the wonders are really countless, it's hard to even wrap our heads around what the world promises until you get up and out and find them and see them for yourself. You can, you know, it should be a priority in life. And hopefully this book kind of nudges you just a little bit off the sofa and out the front door.
So tell me how the new book is different from the first edition.
Well, the first book took me 8 years to write, and I probably could have taken another 8 had my publisher not started tapping his toe and saying, I think it's time. And I was kind of, you know, it was an organic experience. And as I was visiting places and discovering great things, I included them. And I went through many different editors, and nobody really knew what to do with it. And finally, we sent it to the printer as it was, when really I would have liked to have gone back and reassessed things, which I was allowed to do with the new book. So I made it tighter and more comprehensive, and I put many places into a single entry instead of three or four different Maya ruins in Mexico and the Yucatan, for example. I put them into one more concise entry, and then thus opening up the book to what would be hundreds of new destinations elsewhere around the world, 28 new countries, beautiful color photographs. It's just, it's more experiential, I think. There are more mini itineraries within each entry. There's all new information. There are a lot of more budget-conscious hotel suggestions. It's simply a different book with new places and more beautiful because there's color photography, and I think that often, you know, visually kind of gets the juices going.
We're talking with Patricia Schultz, author of the new 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. You said earlier you have actually personally visited all of these places. Is that right? You're not getting any help from anyone?
No, I did have with the new book, because, to be frank, I had a more human advance than I did with the first book, whose advance disappeared, I think, in my first week at Kinko's. I did call on fellow colleagues and travel writers who I knew who either specialized in regions of the world where I was less authoritative, or who lived in areas of the world where I had either never visited or had visited once. And couldn't pretend to know those areas as well as they did. I was always picking brains and bringing in a small cadre of fellow journalists whose writings and experiences I knew and appreciated and upon which I could rely. And together, there are certain areas of the book where I'm just not as familiar with the big countries like India, Russia, China, as I should be. So there were areas when I brought in other people. And this book took a mere 5 years to write, as opposed to the original. And once the publisher understood the success of the book, I think they were less inclined to give me all the time in the world. So there was that element of time involved as well.
I'm going to suspect that over the years since the first edition of the book came out, that you've heard from lots of readers, you missed this place, you should have listed that place. And I wonder if some of those places are places you hadn't been to before that you now have been to, and that might be part of how they wound up in the new edition. Is there some of that going on?
Oh, absolutely, because I need to listen to other people, whether it's through reviews posted on Amazon or somebody sitting next to me on the plane, or just random comments that I hear from somebody's next-door neighbor whose mother's brother, you know, just got married and went on a honeymoon to wherever. And so I always keep these things kind of in the back of my mind, if not jotted down on paper and placed in files. I have incredible archives. I'm always curious to know who's been where and what do they think, and are we on the same page, and did they love it as much as I did, or did they love it more because I went on a rainy day and it was pretty disappointing. So I'm always curious to see, you know, 10 different people can go to the same destination at 10 different times of the year or at 10 different points in their lives and experience something totally and radically different for the positive or the negative than what I experienced. So I'm always listening. And yes, many places did get included in the book for that reason. And yes, many places were vetted and questioned when I heard that other people enjoyed it not at all. But at the end of the day, I really relied upon personal experience where I could, or on my own gut feeling about these places, because travel is such a personal thing. And, you know, what I would consider a kind of must-see before you die place. My father's favorite expression was he wouldn't walk across the street to see that. So it's hard to please everyone. At the end of the day, I think I just tried to please myself and to go with my own personal choice.
I suspect you have a lot of readers who live vicariously through these books. They're not globetrotters at all and never will be, but they still enjoy reading about these places. They're probably the same people who enjoy reading the National Geographic, even though they know they'll never go to almost any of the places that are included. You must have a lot of readers who are like that, who live vicariously through your books.
You know, I do, and it's both very heartwarming and also rather sad that many people don't travel because they've convinced themselves over time that they don't have the budget or that there are lists of reasons that hinder or stop them or make it impossible. And I question that because I then hear sometimes what those excuses are. And to me, they can be surmounted, and they shouldn't be definitive in how much you travel or if you travel at all. But I'm not them, so I don't know if there's a certain hesitation or fear or just not strong enough curiosity to, you know, boost that priority to the forefront and make that trip happen. I mean, there were times when I really shouldn't have, and yet I did anyway, and would come back with a $1 million experience and then pay it off on a credit card for the next 2 years. But then there are others that I understand that maybe they're not well, or maybe they're along in years, or maybe they've got, you know, 11 kids to put through. I mean, there are all kinds of really, you know, life determines your circumstances to some degree, and I appreciate that, and I sympathize with that. But they also, I think, gladly live vicariously. I don't sense a real, you know, sadness in those who can't travel. I think they're quite happy to learn and to listen and to follow me on Facebook. You know, sometimes I post things and there are hundreds who say, you know, I've been here and around the world 11 times and whatnot. And then there will be that one voice that kind of comes through and says, I've never traveled outside the U.S., but I love this page because it has me aware of how great the world is. And that's how they'll experience the world in their life. And whether, you know, it's from vicariously from the proverbial armchair or whether for whatever reasons they have, not everyone can travel, not everyone does. But I think everyone is interested in the world, or at least we should be.
I need to ask you about places that maybe have been left out of the new edition of the book because conditions have changed since the first edition of the book. Maybe they're in countries that have become risky or dangerous to travel to. Is there anything like that that sadly you've had to leave out of this edition because you don't think it's necessarily a good idea to travel there anymore?
Well, as every day goes by, something is happening unprecedentedly somewhere in the world, but those that are major issues, such as Syria and Yemen, they were included in the book because they were some of my favorite destinations, not just in the Middle East, but anywhere in the world. And in fact, we're doing an update as I speak. It's coming out next year, not a revision. The revision that we're talking about really was a complete rethinking of the book. But an update just merely, you know, make sure that prices are current, et cetera. And, you know, what to do with a 10-page section on Syria that is so heartbreaking on so many different levels, not the least that many of the UNESCO sites, these millennia-old souks and bazaars in Aleppo and Damascus that were, to me, time travel and beautiful in ways that, as an American, I had never experienced in this country, and go back to biblical times, what to do? Not only are they no longer there, but nor will any of us really be going to Syria anytime soon. So it's always an issue, and it's always a concern, and I think the reader just merely needs to keep on top of world situations and to not venture into areas when they went to print were perfectly safe and inviting, and suddenly, in the course of a minute, can change and kind of be pulled off our radar.
Patricia Schultz is author of the new 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. She'll be visiting the Schuller Bookstore in the Meridian Mall at 7 p.m. on Thursday, October 16th. Patricia Schultz, thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.